Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Go ahead.
And welcome back to Meeting of the Minds. Today I'm here with the great Ed Saavedra, professor at Montclair State, the department administrator of the Exercise Science and Physical Education Department, an unbelievable athlete. Ed, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
So talk about your experience in sports and how you've grown to the highest level of gymnastics.
Yes. Well, my experience is I was a high-level gymnast, so I training about 20 years in order to becoming an elite gymnast. So I was training for the very young age. So I training with a sophisticated training systems and for various coaches. Chinese coaches and Russian coaches and so forth like that. So that's how my experience is gained. Besides that, I just went to study in the previous Soviet Union University of Physical Education and Exercise Science.
So you went to school in the former Soviet Union?
Yes, I did.
And what country did you compete for?
I competed for my native country, Ecuador.
Excellent. And you competed in the Olympics?
Or what? Yeah, 1980, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And what was the difference? So what made you want to start studying in the Soviet Union?
Well, it's at first I didn't know about anything about it. So when the Olympic committee decided what this opportunity that going to do your university level education, so Soviet Union offering to athletes, so they said, are you willing to go? I said, yeah, go ahead, put me in. So I went. I was down so single, nothing else, you know.
Excellent, right. And one of the things that I noticed when you and I first spoke, I got my master's degree in exercise science at Springfield College. And I remember when we spoke and you were telling me the theory and the way the Soviets train their athletes and the level of education that each coach needed to have, that was totally different than what I learned. And I was very interested in that. Talk about the difference in qualifications and education between maybe an American coach versus a Soviet coach.
Well, Soviet Union developing a program that is very based about science, how you can train young athletes from the very young to the highest level. They could be a champion, a record holding, and stuff like that. So they're based about science. So they studied the human body. They stood studying all the statistics of the previous Olympic champions and world champions and so forth like that. So what I noticed in the U.S., there is not many coaches are educated in this way. So they are coaches just the, oh, because I was an athlete, like I said, I was a swimmer or I was a gymnast, I was a track and field. So here we go, I have a part-time job, I can coach. Of course, there's always exception of the rule, which is some coaches has, they have vision, they can see outside of the box and they can go for it. They figure it out things on their own. It's not because they have the science behind it. Some maybe do, I don't know. But I think it, the Soviets, they were based on science. They don't rely, cut and paste. They didn't do that way. Because every individual, you know, we are different. Genetically, we are different.
Right. And one of the things we spoke about was, you said there was high importance on sports selection based on biomotor qualities, things of that nature. Speak about that.
Well, so the one thing they were really, really focused was in the selection of the athletes for the future careers. So what they did, so they, like I, what I mentioned before, statistics of the previous Olympic champions, how they were selected, how they were doing throughout the years of training, what were the highs and the lows. So, and they put it in records, and then when they make a selection of for, let's say for gymnastics or swimmer or whatever, so this, okay, this child at this age is supposed to do this or that. So, and they're going to follow the same pattern and make a modification upon the time. I mean, and you have to remember that. I mean, that in child development, we're developing in various stages, you know, and different stages, but the most important is the environment. The environment is what had to do with the development of the athletes. Yeah.
Right. And you said that each athlete, based on our height, our body frame, ectomorph, mesomorph, the size of both of our parents, how did that go into the sports selection? I remember you saying between ages 5 and 6 for girls and ages 6 and 7 for boys. Did I get that right?
Absolutely, yes. And some sports just start early, some sports start a little late, but that is how the sports selection do. However, the genetic have to do with your body performs later on. Like say now, if you have two parents, they are obese, you got that gene, you're going to be the same way. So when selecting a little boy, okay, now he's skinny, but when they interview the parents say, wait a second, your dad is 300 pounds and your mom is 200 pounds. So I say, wait a second. So when you hit a puberty, your puberty, so especially for women's, when they hit the puberty is when the hormone all change, all body change. So it's going to change drastically the external way, you know, so and that will affect the performance. Yes, definitely the parent have to do with it.
Right. And talk about the proportions, the body types, the ectomorph versus the endomorph. And also just like we spoke about Michael Phelps, you said he has a short torso, long legs, good for swimming. For a wrestler, it's the opposite. You want long torso, short legs. Talk about that a little.
Well, like I said, when the coach or whoever does the sports selection, they have to make, remember what I mentioned here, the anthropometric measurements. Anthropometric measurement is that you measure the length of the arm, torso, legs, and how written down, see it according, because how much you will have in accordance with their statistics for that specific sport. So they have to do a base upon for the center of gravity too. So let's say for wrestling, If the torso is longer, you're less a little short. Your center of gravity is more close to the base of support, which are the feet or the ground. So you have more control of what you're going to do. Of course, there's a section of the rule always. I mean, there is nothing still written in stone because it's always the exception of the rule. You know, but I said they have to do with the performer. Also, remember, they have to practice the many years that you practice. What I was reading here, so let me see here because I have some tables. Oh, hold on. I have a table here. They say for wrestling. The table here. I lost the page.
What book is that?
This is a sports selection.
Is that in English?
No, that's just translated in Spanish though. Because that's when I went to Cuba and then stay there and then I got it from there. So that was translated by the Satkov Russian coach and translated into Spanish. And okay. For wrestling, they're supposed to be almost 6 years of training before you achieve some level of training. Now women is not a concept. Now there's a women's also, but that time before was not. Swimming does about 5.3 years.
As you said with the wrestling and swimming, 5 or 6 years, you mean before you start wrestling or... What was that?
No. It's 5.7 years to achieve a high level.
Okay.
Of training with sophistication training, method of training, and so forth, nutrition, all the kind of stuff they need to be planning, cycle, microcycles, mesocycles, and so forth like that. So that's it. That's what you need to achieve the high level. So in Soviet Union, what they call the master's sport. Master's sport is when you compete at the highest level. So in order to become a high master's sport, you have to pass. It's similar like you're going to get a master's degree, put it that way. That's why they call master's sports. You have to pass a test, and so very hard test passed. When you pass that one, you're allowed to compete at the high level competitions in order to represent in that particular time the Soviet Union.
So you have to pass a test on the athlete has to pass the test on certain exercises?
Correct.
Okay. Not in competition, just a separate series of exercises.
Different exercises, yeah.
What would those exercises be? And I'm sure they're different for each sport.
Well, of course, they're different for each sport. So, I'm going to say something like, for example, for gymnasts, because that's just my specialty, the gyms have to do with the exercises on reins. It's about 7 to 11 exercises on reins they have to do on their arm. For example, horizontal cross, horizontal cross like this, regular cross, handstands, all the 7 on 11 exercises. That's one event. So they have to do exercises also on the barrel bars, on the pommel horse. So specific exercises that you have to pass it. If you can pass that one, so you becoming a master sport.
And they have that for each sport in the Soviet Union.
Wow. Yeah.
Is that also in that sports selection book or is that a different book?
No, that's different book.
Is there one book that contains all of the tests or is there a wrestling book, a gymnastics book?
No. They have this book here what I have is overall, but is very more lectures like this and some statistic data. Put in here. But there is not specific exercises for each sport. So there are exercises for him, for example, this is for track and field. See this one here? This a trainer specialization exercises for track and field.
And who wrote that book?
This book is wrote by, wait a second. Okay. I'll tell you the author for this one, Trinidad. It was wrote by Vladimir Alavina.
Alavina. And then how about that sports selection book? Is there a translation in English?
I don't know. I could find it, but I don't know.
Who wrote that book?
It was written for Volkov. Volkov.
Okay. All right. That's very interesting. And now, how many anthropometric measurements are there total?
There are few here.
Now at age 5 or 6 for a boy, or for 5 or 6 for a girl, and age 6 or 7 for a boy, they would measure them on these, all athletes on these measurements, correct?
They do, yes, correct.
And then you said they have the norms for Olympic champions for each sport.
They do, yes.
Is that in any of these, is the norms for Olympic champions, is that in any of these books?
I don't have the norms for this book here. You know, this is a good book. You can get it out. This is English version.
I have it. It's here.
Oh, you have it right here. Okay.
That's just for gymnastics, though, correct?
For gymnastics, that's right. Yeah, this is for gymnastics, yeah. I have another one, but that is biomechanics, so I don't know. Biomechanics, this is my old books at school, so this is one of the biomechanics for development of the human body.
It's called Development of the Human Body?
Yeah. This is by Sarkowski. Sasiotsky.
Okay.
Sasiotsky actually is a professor now at University of Pennsylvania, Penn State.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I wonder now, so if in America, let's say a high school coach wanted to start implementing this information, so they would need to have a way to do the anthropometric measurements. Is there a certain apparatus that we could purchase that will help us, or you just need a measuring tape?
Measuring tape is the fundamental one.
Okay, so we need a measuring tape then, and then I guess we would need the norms. We would need two things. We would need three things. The measuring tape, we would need what anthropometric measurements there are, how many there are, and then we would need the norms for Olympic champions for the sports.
That's correct. So actually you also needed a caliper to measure the, let's say the bones right here, the elbows bones, the knee bones width. So you needed those for the calipers also, so in centimeters, so you can write it down that.
Are there good? Do you know any good measurements, or you could just buy them just anywhere on the internet? Just type it in, and then once you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, you can go to buy those welded mechanics, or those calipers are very exactly. I mean, those are good.
Okay.
Now, yeah, those, the caliper, like, I don't have any. Let me see. I do. Hold on. I have it like this.
I thought that's for body fat.
But it's body fat. But they have measurement here for in meters.
Okay.
So you can put it like this and measure it. Well, this is a small, this is a bigger one too. So you just can measure distance of the elbows.
Wow. Well, okay, so I guess where do we find
the neck? Yeah.
Okay, so where do we find the anthropometric exercises, but what exactly, where is that information?
I don't know here in US, but I can find it. Let me see, I have some old books here.
So you have a book that has all the measurements as well?
I have some of them, okay. All of them, because let me see here. I have some books here. I have to look around because I don't have a measurement right now.
Okay.
I know that there is tables with all the measurement. What is the minimum? What is the for this specific sport? For example,
I would love a picture of that. If you find it, take a picture, send it to me. That'd be cool.
Right. For example, in order to, when you measure from the tip of the hands like this, a tip of the hands like that, in this direction like this, like across from here to there, if the body is proportional, so this length from here to there is the same length of your from here to your feet. That should be the same.
Okay, and then I would assume that if it's longer, that would make you better for certain sports. If it was shorter, that would make you better for other sports.
For example, I think Michael Phelps, his arm is way longer. When I measure his arm like this and span like this, when I measure like this, he probably his arm is going to be longer than his body height.
Right.
So, or the arms, some people have short arms, and then when they try to measure from vertical position, it's too short. So maybe he's gonna be good for wrestling because they have more strength, more close to this to the center of gravity.
Right. And you never really hear. I never heard any American coaches speak about this really at all. Almost never.
Yeah.
And then I think about. I remember you said that.
You give me 1 second.
What?
Because I have some. Yes. Hold on a second. Yes. Hello.
Ed's working in his office, so we're making sure he's able to take his call. Just click unmute. I don't hear you. I muted you. There okay. We go.
Yes, I'm sorry because I had that hold for an hour.
No problem.
That was my easy pass. I don't know why. It just
that's okay.
All right. Okay. So. Okay.
So I remember you saying that once you have the anthropometric measurements, then once you put them through the Soviet system, then it's like clockwork. As you said, with wrestling, you said it might take 5.6 years or something like that. So you establish those those markers, and then you would put them through the system?
You have to get, yes. I mean, but yes. Yes and no. Yes, because remember, every human being for the environment, like I mentioned before, the environment have to do with each individual. Because people from the Eastern Bloc they're human, but a different way how they develop things. And the way how the nutrients are, how the mentality is, and so all those factors inflicting also in the development. And besides the point in the genetic, yes. So you can having a round understanding of all the measurements and apply to whoever is going to be using the same measurements. So you can create your own one based upon that.
Okay. And now I think about, okay, so let's say 7 years old, you see that they have a certain body type. You don't necessarily have them do that sport right away, correct? I think I remember you saying it's good to start with many sports, things like gymnastics. Talk about that. How should a young athlete, very young, 4 or 5 years old, what should they start doing to generally prepare their body?
Gymnastics, number one. That's definitely. Every sport before they go into the art specific sport, they do in the elementary school or middle school in Russia, they do gymnastics because that prepares the body for the strength and the flexibility. The other sport they do also for developing agility is soccer. So those sports are more focused in developing all the development of the coordinations, agility, strength, flexibility, those two sports. That's what they consider the fundamental sport for before they go into the specific.
Well,
sport, yes.
Wow, so even why would soccer be a better choice than, let's say, basketball?
Because soccer, what they did, number one, because it's popular in Europe, but soccer is more popular. Number two, they consider that because they have more development, the eye, leg, coordination, the visions. The vision is more panoramic. So also they development the panoramic vision. So when you're looking forward here, you can start development. You see your far away right here in your left side or right side. So that help them out to the athlete for that way too. For example, in the sport, like you're demanding in track and field. When you're running, you have to run and you have to see who is right next to you. So you don't have to turn your head because that means that inflicting in your velocity and stuff like that.
Right. And now I don't know how much in the Soviet Union they do baseball or football, like American football, but would you still recommend for a young kid soccer even above like a baseball or football or basketball?
Well, I recommend that. I mean, if you do soccer, it's fine. If not, you can do just basketball or volleyball or other sport that they are, they are involved with the coordination.
Okay.
Because baseball too, but baseball has just the coordination of eye hands coordination with the bat.
Right.
I think more likely I incline to in sport when you're developing aerobic training. Because soccer and basketball, you're developing aerobic training.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Very interesting. And then, like you said, then the athlete's able to develop once you put them through the plan. And it's a standardized curriculum. In my understanding, there's a standardized curriculum, generally speaking, for each sport. Is that true?
That's correct. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So each sport is specific. So that, like I think I mentioned it to you, when the young athletes training in one system and go to universities, a university sports, so the off season, what they do, everyone, regardless of your wrestling, gymnast, swimmer, basketball, football, doesn't matter, they do the same thing, which it might be negative in some of the sports and positive for some sports. But that inflicting in the performance later on during this competitive system. So that's why, like I'm saying, is each sport, they have to have a specific method of exercises, how they should be done, what they should be doing, and when they should be doing it.
Right. And I could tell you from what I've seen in sports in America, it's not like that at all. It's basically the coach teaches you how he learns, and there's no science to it almost at all.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. I know that because I've been through so many things when I was coaching too. And people ask me, how do you do this? I say, I just told you that because I know how. Because try to explain it to them, biomechanics did not understand the biomechanics because they don't study biomechanics.
Right. So what would be the best way for a coach to begin to educate themselves? Because this is a totally different paradigm, a completely different mindset with approaching training. Are there any books in English that you would recommend a coach who wanted to understand this more?
There's books, but now there is more open science in the internet. You can go YouTube and then looking for methods of training for certain things. Some people, they are good. Some people has, like say, you can find a biomechanics for, why they size, for example, for Euro, so do a Uchimata or do a Makikomi. So how to fence? There is techniques. There is biomechanics. Everything is a mechanics. That's bottom line. Internet now is help a lot. It's not like a 20 years ago with nobody knows everything here. But however, there's some experienced people that sharing knowledge, or they just put just. I saw many of them. They are bogus. They are there's garbage there. So no, everything is right.
Right, right. And now talk about what exercises for a young kid? You were telling me about. I think you said pull ups when you're pulling right when your hands are in front of your butt, not way out here.
No, like this, yeah.
Right. Otherwise, it's bad for your shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially for young kids. Yes.
And then I think I remember you saying rope climb, hang from the bar and bring your feet up to talk about some of those exercises. What are the best exercises for general fitness?
Well, number one, rope climbing. That's definitely for everybody should do it. That's why it's included even in the army. All the military do that because that is one of the best ways to develop upper body strength. Okay. Number two, the chin-ups. The chin-ups here go to the above the bar like that for children. Yeah, go chin-up here. So now, they're more advanced, but some people are going to go all the way up, but that's more advanced. So just for now, for children, it should be here. How many repetition? I would say about, for the children 5-6 years old, I make it to five to six. Six reps. Rest, 5 to 6. Rest, 3 sets is good for them.
Okay.
Now, for the go with development, when we do this way here like this, with your hands in front of you, so we're working on and the forearm thoracic muscle here, right. Biceps, the deltoids, part of the trapeze, the rhomboids, so forth like that, and a little bit of the deltoids. I mean, the latissimus.
Okay.
Okay.
What else for maybe legs or for, I will keep going upper body if you have more, but like legs, your core, all of that.
Okay, for your core, you can the stool ladder, hang out facing out like this here. You just bring your legs up and down.
Okay.
I don't know, I have it here. Let me see. I have a picture of some.
And if an athlete, if a kid can't get their legs all the way up, would you just bring them as high as you can?
Yes.
And should you really try to not swing, or does it matter if you're swinging?
Well, if you go in the stool ladder, there's no way you can swing.
Right.
You just let go, stop right there, and go have to bring it up here.
Okay. So a stool ladder is very important for young kids to have.
Stool ladder is, there should be every gymnasium should have that. Everyone.
And even athletes of any sport.
In any sport, that's who have it like that, because that's where you're going to develop a lot of things there. Like I mentioned before, you can do flexibility, you can do strength, you can do a lot of things there. The leg lift is one of them. So you just go the upper range from hanging and legs up here, or just start a 90 degrees angle and close it. Why 90 degrees angle? Because we're working isometrically and isotonic at the same time. So when we do from the bottom, we're working isotonically only.
Right.
So concentric, eccentric. So, but we're working for the angle, holding the position on 90 degrees angle like this. So we're working isometrically here, and then we're going to concentric, and they go to the eccentric into the isometric.
Okay, so you'll do some with the legs fully extended and all the way up, and then some where you start here and then bring them up.
That's right.
And how many repetitions should they be doing with that? As many as they could do, or?
Well, first you have to get on. The first day you're going to try this one here, you have to get them. Okay, do as many as you can. They say, I can do 10 pushing. Okay, 10's fine. So when you start the program, you start doing at least 7. 7, you know that he could do it right. 7, 3 sets, 7. And eventually, you're going to invent. Every 2 weeks, you're going to add 1 or 2 more repetition. Okay, now 3 weeks, 4 weeks, make a test. Again, test. Okay, now you did, in the first day, you did 10. Now it's almost 4 weeks now. I want to see how many can you do.
Okay.
And you have the records there.
Excellent.
The second time I can do 15. Wow, this is improvement. All right, so you're 15. You have 4 more weeks. 15 or 10, and then increase it to 12 to 15, and then go again 4 more weeks, another test, as many as you can. Maybe do 25.
Okay. So
what are you going to do? Now, when you go, when the student get used to this one, now you can increase the numbers. Sometimes people think it's brutal, but it's not, because we have to force the human body to the limit sometimes. But the most important is the rested time between exercises. For example, young kids, they have to do at least, after they pass all those tests like that, at least 50.
It's a lot.
You believe it or not, yes. We'll think about young kids. Yeah. And, you know, that's from longer repetition. When it's from angle like this, so 90 degrees angle like this, so like this, right? Right here, and then you go like this, up and down.
Right.
That number is less because there's more contraction here.
Right.
So that should be about 20.
Excellent.
And you work isometrically, isotonically, and then you can also work just metrically, just hold.
Okay. So that would be for core. What about for lower back, hamstrings, glutes?
Okay, lower backs. You can use the same one, but you have facing inside. Facing in like this, holding like bar like this.
Yeah.
Okay, your chest is gonna go against the bar, and yeah, you raise your heels.
Backwards?
Backwards, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Raising your heel backwards like this. About first asking how many you can do. Each time you hold, you lift your legs like this. So your gluteus masses, your maximus and minor gluteus are working hard.
I've never seen that exercise before.
That's right. Yeah. So you go like this here. You hold it like you go up and down.
Hold for a second or 2 seconds?
No, just go like this. Make a reps.
Don't swing, or you have to swing?
You can't swing because the bar is going to stop you here.
Okay.
You're doing it on this, on the stall bar.
Okay. Okay.
No, on a single bar, because you're going to swing crazy like that. You do nothing. Stall bar. Okay. 15 times. I mean, ask the same thing. How many can you do?
Okay.
And then you start training it progressively.
Okay.
Also, when you're there, you can go side to side. Raise your legs side to side, or just go side to side. So you work on parallel obliques.
Wow. Okay. Anything else for lower back that the kids should be doing? Or for their legs, for their hamstrings?
Okay, now, another one for the hamstrings. The hamstring is where we're working is in the... We're using it. Sometimes you can use a mobile device.
The glute hamstring, the glute hams?
Yeah,
glute ham calf machine?
Yeah, you can use that one for little kids. But there's other exercises that work in, that can work eccentrically way, but for the children, it's too harsh. It's too harsh for the kids because that's just, I should just focus more on the and develop the big muscles like a quads, hamstring too, because hamstring is very important muscle, very important. If the hamstring is weak, you're not doing it what you're supposed to do. If your quads are so strong, you're gonna hurt your hamstring. If your hamstring is so weak, they're gonna pull you back in the muscles.
Right. So,
yeah. for the hamstring, I would suggest in doing it, you believe it or not, you can do backwards squat jumps.
Backwards, so you jump back, you squat down and jump backwards?
Backwards, and travel down.
And keep jumping backwards. Squat down, jump up backwards, squat down, jump up.
That's right, full squat.
That's what you were telling me about, the importance of a full squat. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing for the hamstrings also. For the quads, we're doing the full squat all the time, forward, high first, or high and long, the longest you can go.
Okay, so that's good. That's better than just doing a squat. Instead of just standing up and squatting, stand, jump up and out, or stand, jump up and backwards.
You stand, you jump, go down all the way and jump high as you can and long as you can. Because high and long. So you force your muscles to actually to the maximum output power.
How young can a kid be to start doing that, or at any age?
As long as it can.
And it has to be a good, you want a good clean squat as deep as you can, not on your toes, sitting back on your heels, correct?
Flat feet, yes, right. Yeah. Okay, so when I'm teaching the children, I make the children do it like, say, people say that doing like frog jumps. I say frog jumps. Okay, do frog jumps. But I say, I want the frog jump higher and longer. I want to see which frog go farther.
Should they rest in between jumps or should they keep going? Should they get it?
You can give a length. Let's say that you can give a 10 meters maybe. I don't know how many. Meters, 30 feet. Yeah. You rest there. But resting, you can do another activity, not just hang out like this. No,
right. But what about in between each jump? So I squat down, I jump, just keep going?
Yeah, just keep going.
Okay.
Yeah, because usually for 30 feet, you're doing how many? Maybe 6, 7?
Right.
There's not too many, yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you're good.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the last thing I wanted to speak about was, I remember you telling me about the vests and it's important to train. We'll talk about the weight of the vest. Like in America, it's all weightlifting. It's bench press, pull downs, everything like that. But you're saying it might be better for an athlete to train more with a vest. Talk about that.
Why the vest is important? Because they call the overload. Why the vest is important? Because, you're training the activity that you're going to actually use it. But overloading, you make your muscles work beyond what the muscles actually do normally. So that increases your strength, increases your way of the technique and way how you're going to perform, to do better. Right. So I think I mentioned it to you. I mean, the vest is the best way. It's not overloaded too high. You have to use it between 3 to 5% of your body weight.
And no more. And I remember you said no more than 10 ever.
No.
But 3 to 5% is the optimal. So right away, I think, am I going to get stronger? That's not going to be enough. I think I should be squatting more. I should be deadlifting more. But you're saying, no, you want to train in that movement.
Let's say now, if you're a wrestler, right?
Right. Now, like high school, college.
Okay.
You
pull the vest for 3 or 5%. Okay, you go to training on doing a match. You're training with your vest. You're training with your vest. Actually, you're training your technique, your coordination, your cardiovascular And also you're training your, well, you do cardiovascular also. They have to do with the aerobic and anaerobic performing at the same time. So when you take the vase off at the competition time, you feel like somebody is, it's like a lighter to you.
Right.
So that's the purpose of this. Now, of course, you have a physical preparation besides this. Let's say that, let me play this way. In every cycle of competition, you have an American called pre-season, right? We call it pre-competitive season. Pre-competitive, competitive, and resting. And the pre-competitive is when we do all the exercises to make the whole body strong enough. In the competition season, we do a specific for the competition.
So the vest. So the vest is better for.
Zara. Yes. Yeah. Okay. No problem. No. Yeah. We're all good now. You're welcome. Thank you. Bye. Okay. Sorry. Yes. They're specific. You need the specific. Like I said, when you put the vest for training, this is a specific your training.
Right. Should a kid work out with a vest? Should a young kid work out the vest or no, not yet?
Not yet. Why not? Because they are too young and they still developing the technique.
Right, right.
Developing the technique. When the technique is achieved good and embedding in the brain, and then we can increase the load with the vest. Yes.
Right. And now would you say, you said the 3 to 5%. Now if you were doing exercises like, let's say, pull-ups, or you said you don't like dips, I remember you saying you don't like the dips or the push-ups as much, but for pull-ups and for different exercises, should you go heavier for that? And then when you do sports movements, go lighter, like 3%? Or does that not matter?
I don't get your question. One more time.
Is there a certain, if you're training for strength, should you go higher, like 5%? And if you're training technique, do you go lower, 3%?
Yeah, I mean, for technique, you need less repetitions and focuses and the way how the exercise should be done. Now, increasing strength, we need to do exercises to make the muscles to be able to hold that technique later on.
Okay.
Because with the strength, you can excel in the technique.
Right.
Okay. So you cannot do the technique without strength because they both are they coming along.
Okay. Okay. And then finally, last question is you said that when you're teaching a skill, whether it be gymnastics or wrestling, don't keep doing it over and over, right? You said, explain that point and we'll end on that.
Yeah, no problem. Just the thing is because too many especially when you're just learning new things, make it too many repetition. They need to get in into the brain. People say they have to get into the muscle. The muscle does what the brain tells you what to do. It's a brain coordination with the muscle coordination. So if you do one repetition, very good, okay. Stop. Do something else. So you have to what it called change the thinking.
Okay. And then you come back to it.
Yes. Now, why you come back again and do the same thing? Because every time you deviate in that thing, they clear the mind. And then when they come back, they have to thinking. And when you're thinking, that's when you're learning. After the 5 repetition, becoming mechanical. So you're just doing it.
Right. So you would say if they did it once right or 5 times right, switch completely.
Switch completely.
After 1 or 5, or it doesn't matter.
The most accurate number is a 5 repetition, yes.
Okay. And then how long should they do a different skill and then come back?
That had to be the coach's decision. Because you know what? You'll do 5 and then come back and do the 5 mark. Good enough. Because they always have to finish the repetition with the good ones.
Okay.
Yeah, because if you finish with a bad one, that's what the last thing going to stick out in your brain. And when you're back, you're going to do the same thing as you did the last one.
Yeah. That's excellent. Ed, thank you so much. So much great information. My head is spinning. I want to watch the video again and take the notes. Any of those books that you have that you could recommend, that write it down. I'll send you an email. But any of those books, I'm really interested in this. This was very helpful.
No problem at all. Okay.
Thank you very much, Ed. Take care.
You're welcome. Take care too.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.